This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
Welcome back to another Friday on the Damage Report. I'm Ravana filling in for John Iadarola, and I'm really excited for today's show. We've got a lot of great stories. We're gonna do some updates on the Kevin McCarthy drama, which is seemingly endless now. We're gonna talk about lawsuits against AI that might be fruitful for creatives who are trying to fight against AI stealing their jobs, essentially. We're gonna talk about how Taylor Swift is registering people to vote. So all that and more coming up. And joining me today is none other than Brett Ehrlich, back from vacation. Brett, it's so great to be here with you today.
Yes, I am back. Brett Ehrlich stayed in America, but his alter vacation ego, Vincenzo Azul, left. My wife, she stayed. Her alter ego, Connie Thumps, went abroad. So Vincenzo Azul and Connie Thumps took over Southeast Asia, got a little bored, and then went to Tokyo. That's what we did. It was very fantastic, and we're glad that that our bodies returned to Los Angeles so that we could fully contribute to John in his absence. And I'm so happy to be with you, Ray.
It's been a long time since we did a show together.
And guess what? We've got two today, because I will also be on hour two of Main Show along with Jordan Ewell. The bad boys of TYT will be in studio, and you will have to wrangle us from afar.
Oh, hell yeah. Okay, that'll be exciting. A lot of good stories coming up on that too that I'm looking forward to. Speaking of stories, should we get into this first one?
Let's do it.
All right, so we've been covering throughout this week, last week, that Kevin McCarthy is losing his grip on his party. Whatever grip he has had has essentially dissipated, and he's looking very, very weak. Let's watch this.
I don't understand why anybody votes against bringing the idea and having the debate. And then you got all the amendments if you don't like the bill. This is a whole new concept of individuals that just want to burn the whole place down. It doesn't work.
He's losing his grip on his party and maybe also his sanity, not looking very well there. But what was the thing that he was complaining about that they weren't able to pass? Well, New York Times reported just hours after Mr. McCarthy signaled he had won over some of the holdouts and was ready to move forward, a handful of Republicans broke with their party to oppose a routine measure to allow the military appropriations bill to come to the House floor for debate, joining with Democrats to defeat it. And this is a very odd thing to happen, because this vote happens every year. It is extremely routine, as laid out in the article. Typically, as it goes, the majority in the House will vote in lockstep to open the floor for debate on this military appropriations bill, and the minority party will oppose it. But that did not happen for Kevin McCarthy, who we all know is being opposed by the far right in his caucus, as well as members of the more moderate, to whatever extent there is such a thing as a moderate Republican. What that really means now is just people whose seats are not safe because they are representing purple districts. But from them, he's getting criticized by them from slightly his left. Things are not going very well for him, that he couldn't even get this procedural vote through. And it's a stressful time for Republicans. We love to see it, folks. And what we also love to see is this tweet from Jake Sherman, Punchbowl News founder. Effing chaos, a total crap show. Two texts I've gotten from inside the House Republican leadership in the last few minutes. Just some insight there. And I think it's important to highlight that that's Republican leadership. That's not just some, you know, first term congressperson from, you know, Bumble F nowhere. Like, that is the Republican leadership who is describing it in those terms. Now, the main leverage that these holdout voters are sort of holding over Kevin McCarthy's head is the ability to motion to vacate the speaker. And for anyone who's unfamiliar with what that means, it's essentially saying we're going to dethrone you as speaker and then start moving to put someone else in his place. And apparently he's telling them to do it. We got this tweet from Milani Zanona. It says, new, a fired up Speaker McCarthy addressing his conference behind closed doors made clear to his members he is not afraid of his critics forcing a vote to oust him as speaker, according to three sources in the room. Move the effing motion, he said, according to the sources. And they might call his bluff. Everyone knows probably by now that Matt Gaetz is the leader of these opposers of Kevin McCarthy. He's the person who very conspicuously left the motion to vacate the speaker in the bathroom where he knew Kevin McCarthy would find it. And Brett, I'm like really enjoying this chaos in the Republican Party, because whatever they're infighting, whatever that's going on right now, people are suffering because of it. It doesn't look good. It is a huge political loss for them. And the Democrats don't even have to do anything to look good right now.
Yeah, it's weird. Usually you can blame the other party for a government shutdown. They're blaming themselves. And Kevin McCarthy's acting like that guy who like goes to the park for a barbecue and he's got a dog and the dog is like the worst dog in the world. And for a long time he was like, he's fine. He's just in a bad mood. We have to ignore him till he settles down. And then when he lays down, everything's fine. But now he's at the point where that dog has like all the ribs in his mouth and he's got the potato salad all over his face. He just ruined the whole barbecue. And now he's like, just all right. And then Kevin McCarthy is quote fired up. What does that look like? The fired up Kevin McCarthy is, don't make me overpronounce my R's more than I already do. He's this only guy from California with a thick Wisconsin accent when he talks.
He definitely has a Wisconsin accent to him. So this is happening. This is going on. The question now is how does the Democratic Party respond to this, right? And yeah, they're of two minds essentially.
Yeah, sure. It's really difficult for the Democrats in this situation, and for Kevin McCarthy, like. Just to put it in perspective, this part of the vote is very just like, yeah, we'll talk. We put it to a point where we can talk about it. But the Matt Gaetzes and that whole part of the party, they're in this raw pursuit of power, but I think for its own sake, I don't know what they're really trying to leverage the establishment into doing. Because the establishment of the Republican Party already doesn't want the government to do anything. They already don't want to collect taxes. They already don't want to do much. I guess the only thing they want to do is fund military action. But really, when it comes down to it, if you take a bunch of individuals within the Republican Party and you ask them a question, should we intervene overseas? A lot of these folks that like Matt Gaetz are like, no. But when you corner them on specific investments, they're like, actually, yeah, that makes sense. And we should spend millions and jillions and trillions of dollars on border security. And we should invade Mexico, if you ask the Marjorie Taylor Greene portion of the party. So a lot of it just kind of falls apart. There's no coherent strategy. What they do know is that they kind of have Kevin McCarthy by his short and curlies, and they're just flexing on him for that. And it's not to any specific end that I can determine that's actually functional, other than just further telling the establishment that this is Trump's party. But when you ask Trump about specific things, he'll be like, yeah, just pass the damn thing. It's not making any of us look good.
Right. And especially like highly like evidenced by the fact that Matt Gaetz is arguing both that we need to massively slash spending in the budget that's passed, but also we need to massively increase spending on border security. So I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. And now the Democrats are flirting with the idea of supporting McCarthy to keep him in power and to oppose the far right insane person who they would replace him with. So of course, the people who are in favor of, you know, making a deal with McCarthy are the moderate members of the Democratic Party. CNN reported publicly, Democratic leader Hakeem Jeffries has not weighed in on how he'd want his members to manage a challenge to McCarthy's speakership, saying it's hypothetical at this point. But privately, Jeffries has counseled his members to keep their powder dry, according to multiple sources. What is he, from the past? A recognition it's better for Democrats to keep their options open as the government funding fight plays out. So if the motion to vacate were to be introduced, it would only take 5 GOP members joining all of the House Democrats to remove McCarthy. So if there are 6 members of the Democratic Party who are gonna outweigh those members of the Republican Party to support McCarthy, that's how they would help him maintain power. But even the Democrats who are considering this, moderate as they are not considering it in exchange for nothing. They do want to get some help from Kevin McCarthy in exchange for this. CNN reported that members who spoke to CNN made clear that any Democratic help would come at a cost, and their asking price for saving his speakership, Democratic members say, is a bipartisan deal to avoid a shutdown, a route McCarthy is not yet prepared to take, as Republicans are still trying to find consensus on a GOP plan to fund the government. It's a complicated dance for Democrats who don't want to be seen as saving McCarthy, especially after he just launched an impeachment inquiry into President Joe Biden and could open them up to backlash on the left. But some Democrats also fear the potential alternative, a government shutdown, and the prospect of an even more right-wing lawmaker ascending to the speakership if McCarthy is ousted, or the House being paralyzed with no candidate able to win 218 votes to be elected speaker. Brett, I think the most interesting thing about this to me is McCarthy's not a moderate Republican at all. Like, he just has to placate that part of his party now that he is the, you know, speaker. This is someone who voted not to certify election results. Like, this is someone who tried to overturn democracy in our country. The idea that, like, this is the moderate guy that we need to, you know, keep out the literal fascist part of the party is crazy, considering he is also part of that wing of the party.
Yeah, it's fascinating. You look at it from all different perspectives, taking your own personal interests out of it and everything. It's like, this is what it looks like when one wing of the party flexes on the establishment, so to speak, of the party. Like, Kevin McCarthy is doing that thing that a lot of folks in politics kind of want to slash have to do when they get to a certain point. They're trying to, quote, act like the adult. Adult means two things. Adult means either you're doing responsible things that are necessary once you realize the full scope of being a grown up, but also something that happens when you're an adult is you stop, you lose that innocence, you lose the fresh eyes on something, you lose the ability to really buck convention because you're not really familiar with those conventions when you're a kid. And when you're an adult, you just you hear people say, I grew up and lost all my dreams, like my children murdered my dreams. Like, that's what Kevin McCarthy's going through. And from a purely using the leverage you have on your establishment perspective, this is what that looks like. So it can go. But what is, then you have to look at the consequences of that. The consequences of using the leverage is what? Like, you're gonna get someone more radical than Kevin McCarthy in there. Their calculus has to be something like what, the question that always faces us, which is like, what does each party's leadership and voter base actually care about? It looks like right now the folks that are in the Gates wing just really only care about Trump being awesome and not supporting Ukraine. And this the establishment of the party typically has been like, I don't care. I'm not religious, but somehow I have to cater to the anti-abortion religious wackos of my party so I can get in power and cut taxes. Well, the crazies in the Republican Party also want to cut taxes. So maybe they will find some weird marriage somewhere in there that allows someone else to take over. But I don't think that the 5 people, there's no route for the Republicans to side with the Democrats in finding a new speaker. Like, that's just not gonna happen. And typically when the incumbent party does kind of, or when the party in power does kind of side with the wackos, you look at the Tea Party, you look at that history, they end up losing power, period. It ends up going poorly. No one likes the shutdown. Sorry to filibuster here, but that's kind of the overall calculus. When they do catch this car, no one's happy when the government shuts down, and it largely hurts the blue collar government workers that aren't getting paid during this time.
Okay, and speaking of that, because that's a really good point. Actually, I'm gonna pocket that for a minute and say this, because you were talking about like the Trump wing of the party and what they're just essentially, their entire argument here is like Trump is fantastic and we need to worship him. I mean, this is the Republican Party's, they've shot themselves in the foot. They let Trump be their policy decider on every single thing. He was their entire platform. Literally, they didn't even put out an official platform before the 2020 election. It was like a huge story about they were supposed to reveal their platform at CPAC that year, and instead they were just like, it's Trump, whatever he says goes. They gave so much power to him, and he still maintains that power over their party that like they have created this monster that they now have to wreck it with. And Trump, you know, is calling the shots, right? Even with Kevin McCarthy, he called the shots about the impeachment inquiry. That was his doing. That was his revenge for being impeached twice. He wanted Joe Biden to feel that same thing. So it's so silly for this to be like an intra-party fight when it's like you all created this, every one of you, in allowing Trump to be your God King Emperor of your party, created this monster, and now you have to reckon with it.
Yeah, and I say the Democrats shouldn't help out McCarthy. There's nothing really in it for them. They're, unless they get tangible Democrat affiliated goals accomplished, then there's no incentive for them to help McCarthy out. Like they shouldn't do it, but they probably will. They probably just will, and then they will feed into the narrative that both parties are the same. The leadership just wants to stay the leadership. Nothing will fundamentally change, and the little guy will get hurt in all of this because none of their policies that end up making it into the budget actually help blue collar workers in America.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, I feel like if they do try to help him out, is this not just going to turn into another moment where they're like, oh, we need to boost Trump's profile because he's going to be easier to run against? And then, wow, how did that work out for you, Democrats? Very well.
And it's so classically American. Like the American public, I don't know if this is like everyone's like this. But you know, people vote for their representatives, and then they get the Congress that they voted for, and they hate that Congress. And that Congress does stuff that, and the politicians, their leaders, once in power, they have horrible approval ratings because people are, you know, the messaging gets to the people react to it in ways that is catered to that messaging and tested so that it will yield exactly what that messaging is supposed to yield. But the people, like, what are our options at the end of it? The Republicans got what they want. They got the House of Representatives. It is wildly fractured. They can't even get to the point where they can start blaming it on the Democrats because it falls apart within their own caucus. No one likes that. And it'll lead to a government shutdown. No one likes that. And then it'll lead to some weird, or it'll lead to some last minute deal making that is just cosmetic to save face. The get-go and all posturing and no results. No one likes that. No one likes the system. They like it in theory, but in practice, they hate every single step of the way.
And it is fascinating because someone like Matt Gaetz was touting that he has tens of thousands of workers who will be asked to work without pay in his district. But he's like, and that's a sacrifice I'm willing to make for you, which I think is a good segue into this last section of the story, that Congress people, members of Congress, get paid during a government shutdown. Blue collar workers working for the government do not get paid and are asked to continue working. For example, TSA workers are asked to continue working for no pay Yeah, right. So one Democrat has decided to try to do something about this, and that's Angie Craig, who introduced this bit of legislation for Business Insider. And Wednesday afternoon, Craig announced that she had formally introduced the My Constituents Cannot Afford Rebellious Tantrums, Handle Your Shutdown Act, also known as the McCarthy Shutdown Act. I love these names. Whoever's job it is just to come up with these acronyms, I want that job. I just want to be the congressional acronym czar. Can I? Can someone connect me to that? But it continues on with the express desire to halt members' pay for as long as the government remains shut down. So according to this bill, members of Congress would have their pay temporarily cut, 1 day's worth of pay for every day the government is out of operation. And then they would receive the full amount at the end of the congressional session, because it is difficult, you know, the way that the salaries are made. You cannot technically completely eliminate that, but they would not be getting it during the time that Congress is shut down. So it would be very well supported by the public, especially by the people who actually do not receive their pay during the time of a government shutdown. And then just one last bit of fun. The way they screenshot this has been killing me since they posted it. But while the GOP is in complete disarray, the White House didn't miss a chance to make fun of Kevin McCarthy and quote tweet Matt Gaetz's criticism of him with this picture. Heartbreaking. The worst person, you know, just made a great point. But what's killing me is, like, this is not the meme that everyone else posts. They literally went to the article and got their own screenshot of it to post it and cropped it weird. But I mean, you know what? Why not take this moment to do some, you know, instead of doing policy, do some politics and make fun of the party that is in complete disarray.
It is a nightmare. I love this. I would caution Representative Angie Craig on the slippery slope she might be creating, because this might lead to some kind of compensation package structure for our representatives that's based on, get this, performance. I think we should do that. As the establishment of the party turns more into the capitalistic, like more and more enshrines the, like, let me give my shareholders some return on their investment strategy, I think we should do that. I think they should act like salespeople, where they have a very nominal base salary and the rest of their compensation is based on a bonus structure that's tied to performance and job approval. I think there should be some way that we can hold them accountable, because they, all the people who do that are try to have that kind of structure foisted on other people and in other businesses. I think, you know, and I'm willing to do a very, very generous bonus structure that gets them up to, you know, the salary that they were already promised. Instead, I mean, it's an insane amount of money that we pay them. It's something like $176,000 a year to work essentially the same amount of days that teachers work, and teachers don't get paid nearly that much. And it's probably less. They always say that they're going back to their constituencies so that they can, like, do groundwork, but they just, yeah, go home you know, take meetings on how to get a really cool job when they're done being a representative, and maybe call their stock trader to act on some of the insider information they have.
We should definitely dock their pay for every time they're doing fundraising, anytime they're doing any sort of, because that's most of the time that these people are, especially members of the House, because every year is an election year, essentially. They're up for re-election every 2 years. Most of the time they spend is spent trying to fundraise, is spent calling donors. So we should be subtracting dollars from them for all of the time that they take up doing that. Although I totally support your incentive structure.
That said, like the Matt Gaetz, going back to the Matt Gaetz quote, Matt Gaetz says, we will have a government shutdown. You know, Gaetz pins the shutdown on McCarthy, saying we'll have a government shutdown and it's absolutely Speaker McCarthy's fault. We cannot blame the Biden administration for not having moved our individual spending bills. We cannot blame House Democrats. We can't even blame Chuck Schumer in the Senate. Dude, you're wearing a hot dog outfit trying to find who's responsible for this. Like, you can blame you. You're the guy. Your role boys are what's holding it up, and you're saying like, we can't. I can't even figure out who to blame besides McCarthy.
We're all trying to find the guy who did this.
Exactly, dude. And it's you, Matt Gaetz. And while I do agree with Matt Gaetz on very strange things, like mostly pharmaceutical based and corporate PAC money based, like guys. Pretty much a wacko saying he's willing to make sacrifices, as you pointed out, for his constituents. When this guy had to make a damn sacrifice in his entire life. He did not even like waiting till people are 18. He doesn't make that sacrifice.
And I have a feeling those constituents are not going to feel very good about Matt Gaetz choosing to make that sacrifice on their behalf. It's all love for Wisconsin. No hate.
I hate Wisconsin, and here's the reason why. I went to a UCLA versus Wisconsin Rose Bowl game, and the guy and UCLA lost, and the guy in front of me had the thickest Wisconsin accent, and it is just pure bitterness, and it's unfair to the great people of Wisconsin. California, Wisconsin, both make excellent cheeses. And we should find that kind of common ground and not phonetic ground. And extending the olive branch first and foremost is Kevin McCarthy by doing this strange Midwestern accent, even though he's from like, is he from Orange County or Bakersfield or something like that?
I do. One of my favorite thing about Wisconsin is that you'll see all these road signs while you're up there that are just like cheese and wine. Next stop, you'll just go to a place and they'll let you test as many wines and as much cheese as you want. And they won't ask you to pay for anything. They'll just let you try it all. And that is, if there is a heaven, it is a roadside wine and cheese stand in northern Wisconsin. I'm sure of that.
Awesome.
All right. Let's talk about Trump's allies leaving him, as he has often done with his friends, fake friends, as it were. And one of Trump's newest fake friends is Lynn Wood. Because if you all remember names that were released a few weeks ago on who the Fulton grand jury wanted to indict, and then Fannie Willis declined to indict these individuals. One of those people was pro-Trump lawyer. Lynn Wood, no longer a lawyer, was a lawyer at the time. And now we see why Willis may not have moved forward with charges, because in a filing arguing that attorneys for Trump's co-defendants may have conflicts of interest, Willis named Wood as one of those people slated to serve as witnesses for the state. From the Hill, a special purpose grand jury just heard evidence in the probe for months, had recommended Wood be indicted. But prosecutors ultimately opted against charging him with Trump and 18 others last month. Wood previously indicated that he had been subpoenaed to appear before the special grand jury. Continues on, Wood said he received the subpoena last week after the indictment was handed up to testify at next month's trial. He dispelled the notion that he had reached some sort of agreement with prosecutors. Of course he did. Of course he was trying to dispel that notion. And he did it pretty firmly in an interview. He said this. There's zero truth to that, Wood said when asked if he had turned against Trump, although why wouldn't he? He's lost everything. He's lost his ability to practice law. His entire career is faced trials. He's faced disciplinary hearings because of his defense of Trump. Why wouldn't he turn on him? Why wouldn't he turn on them? But he posted this to Telegram, still defending Trump. Still defending his actions. He posted this, says, I have been subjected to a barrage of Mockingbird media requests this morning to comment on stories claiming that I have, quote, flipped on President Trump because I have been subpoenaed as a witness in the Powell case. There is no truth to those accusations. I have no idea why I am being asked to testify at the trial. I think you have some idea. I have had no discussions with the DA's office since I testified before the special grand jury several months ago. Strikes me as yet another effort by the fake media to attack or smear me. Super relevant, Lynn Wood. Someone that the media needs to get after. Someone super hot in the news, Lynn Wood. But he ends it with saying, fake news is fake news, always has been, always will be. Enjoy your afternoon. God bless each of you. I don't understand this right wing obsession with Telegram. He's got it. We'll pull up this next one as well. But like, I don't even understand how that works. But they're all on it, and they're all planning crimes in broad daylight.
Right, like the biggest. I'm just like, wait a minute, hold on. That's right, Telegram exists. I forget which one it is, but it was one of those. It's like Twitter sucks, and then they went off and they ran it, and then it made enough people say Twitter sucks, where Twitter's like, I gotta get out of this business. Then it gets sold to Elon Musk, and half of them are like, I don't know what to do. Should I go back to Twitter now that I guess this electric car maker is in charge of it, but somehow I like him? but still Lynn Woods on Telegram, probably because it's the only one that's on its phone and he doesn't know how to get it off his phone. And he thinks it is Twitter. I don't know.
Telegram got to make a lot of appearances in the January 6th trials, though. So very hot in evidence by the prosecution in those trials.
So ridiculous. And here's the thing about Lynn Wood and Donald Trump and anyone else caught up in this, like, is he, isn't he flipping on Trump? It's like their brand is lying. Mm-hmm. That is their brand. Their whole thing is equivocation, sliminess, saying one thing to you and another thing at the country club. Like all the stuff that on paper Trump fans would hate is stuff that Trump and his cabal of misfits absolutely do back to the people who say they would hate that stuff. Mm-hmm. So Lynn Wood is completely Lynn Wooding. He's completely like staying within his brand circle to say, no, I'm not doing any of this. And then saying the easy peasy thing to say when you're cornered, fake news. That's what it is, fake news. Even though that's not what fake news actually means. What you guys do for a living is fake news.
One thing that's not fake news is that Lynn Wood is no longer allowed to practice law. He was facing, he was staring down the barrel of disbarment. So in Richard Nixon style, he chose to voluntarily give up his law license so that he wouldn't have to be a disgraced, disbarred former attorney. Now he can just be a disgraced former attorney, not disbarred. But he was a huge purveyor of the 2020 election conspiracies, the big lie. And here he is back in 2020, right after the election, talking about Georgia specifically.
Where's Kelly Loeffler here? Where's David Perdue? He ought to be standing right here. Those two people want your vote, then they ought to tell you what we're telling Brian Kemp. Get a special session of the legislature now. Do not be fooled twice. This is Georgia. We ain't dumb. We're not gonna go vote on January 5th in another machine made by China. You're not gonna fool Georgians again. Why would you go back and vote in another rigged election? For God's sakes, fix it. You gotta fix it before we'll do it again.
Right, I went to law school, but I must have missed the class where they teach you how to how to do this kind of thing at a rally. Why? How on God's green earth are you an attorney who's just, you know, doing your preacher-esque, you know, call to action on, like, that is not your job even a little bit. Why are, and every bad thing that's happened to him as a consequence of this is entirely his fault. Someone who obviously loves the limelight, someone who wants to, you know, be in the news and thinks himself a little more important than he is. But like, you know the law. You had to pass the bar and you're standing up there implicating yourself in what you know are crimes. But why?
You know how, I've said this I think on the show before, you know, quantum mechanics and Newtonian mechanics are at odds with each other. You know, you get to a certain scale and the things that normally apply to bodies don't apply anymore. That's what happens at a certain profile in American politics, in a certain level of zeros in your bank account. The things that apply, the Newtonian mechanics of, like, you know, F equals ma, a body in motion will stay in motion. Things have mass and you can't be created. All those things apply to normal people on normal scales. So if I started doing something horrible, so for example, if I said all that stuff on Telegram and was just some schmo who went to the Capitol on January 6th, I would be in jail for 20 years. But Lynn Wood, he's in the quantum realm. But in reverse, he's so big now. He's on the largest scale where now he's not necessarily gonna get put in jail. And now all of these trials are not trying whether they're guilty or innocent. No, no, no. They're trying whether the person is big enough to have the rules not apply to them, or small enough for the rules to apply to them. And the only thing at his disposal is to become big enough by turning state's witness.
Yeah.
And going after Trump and joining the other side. But he's gonna deny that he's doing that until he absolutely has to out himself. And the stuff that you just heard him say on that stage is just a bunch of bald-faced lies that he's hoping and he has confidence he'll get away with telling without consequence. And that's just how he's gonna act because Trump made it that way in politics.
Right, he did always have that Uno reverse card in his back pocket. To play. Do we have time for Matt Schlapp?
Schlappen. Okay.
We're gonna slap the story right in the face. Like, but I do need to start with saying a quick content advisory, because for anyone familiar with Matt Schlapp, the story is gonna deal with sexual assault. So if that is, you know, something that you need to tune out for a few minutes to, we encourage you to do so and then tune back in a little bit. But with that said, Matt Schlapp was on Newsmax, epitome of journalism, and was asked about Rupert Murdoch's retirement from Fox. Let's take a look.
This is really amazing news. I mean, Fox News has played a critical role in championing conservative causes for a very long time. And people like my wife, Mercy, and me were on Fox. I was on Fox practically every day for years and years and years. And then something happened in the country. The BLM riots happened, the virus happened, and then this crazy presidential election with all this voter fraud happened. And Fox seemed to want to be at war with its viewers, and people who have opinions and voices like me became a less hospitable place. And thank God, at the same time, Newsmax was really taking off. So I think a lot of that viewership has transitioned over. So the real question for Lachlan Murdoch, who I don't know, is, you know, is he going to recapture the spirit of the early years of Fox, or are they going to continue down the woke road?
That is Matt Schlapp with a straight face saying that the reason he hasn't been on Fox News lately is because they're too woke. And then he says that something happened in this country, and he lists a few things. He talks about BLM protests, COVID. I think it might have more to do with the $787 billion settlement from Fox to Dominion, more so than them being woke. But also, I don't think that any of those things are the reason why Matt Schlapp specifically has not been on Fox News's airwaves, because according to Justin Barragona from the Daily Beast, following the allegations, Schlapp has essentially been barred from Fox News airwaves. Neither he nor his wife Mercedes, a former Fox News contributor and Trump administration official, have appeared on the network since January. Besides shutting out the Schlapps, Fox News all but ignored this year's CPAC, despite the symbiotic relationship the confab enjoyed with the right-wing network in years past. And just to prove that point, here's Fox News informing its viewers of the allegations against Schlapp.
There's a couple of things going on with CPAC. It's not all the Trump-DeSantis divide. There's also a lot of controversy about Matt Schlapp, the head of the American Conservative Union, which puts on CPAC. There's allegations against him of sex harassment. And so perhaps some figures are avoiding that whole situation.
And let's give a little bit more detail on what that whole situation is from NBC News. From Manuel's Tavern to the Hilton Garden Inn there at the Atlanta airport, he literally had his hands on me, the staffer said in a video he recorded early in the morning of October 20th, just a couple hours after the alleged incident. Matt Schlapp of the CPAC grabbed my junk and pummeled it at length. To my shame, I did not say no or stop, the staffer said in the video, a recollection he repeated in the interview with NBC News. God knows it was not a wanted advance. And of course, to the staffer, it is not your fault. And we know now that Schlapp has a history of doing this, and it's been impacting the organizations he leads. Here's this headline from WAPO. CPAC urged to probe more sexual misconduct claims against Chair Matt Schlapp. And just to give a little context of some of those other incidents, because it is, as I said, not just the one staffer. In one incident, a staffer said Schlapp attempted to kiss him while drinking late after a work function in 2017. The staffer also provided documentation from that night to the Washington Post showing physical contact that the staffer said was unsolicited. In another incident, Schlapp allegedly made unwanted physical advances on someone else's employee during a CPAC business trip in Palm Beach, Florida in early 2022, according to multiple people informed of the incident. But that being said, Brett, I think it's more likely that Fox News is woke than that they want to distance themselves from this sexual harasser.
Fox News is a business. And when it's so funny, he's like, we should go back to the early days of Fox News. You know, when all those people who would eventually either be fired or have to make huge settlements costing tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars for that sexual harassment. Let's do the era before people suffer consequences for that. It is so overt and on the nose the way he's even framing it. He might say woke along the way, but what he's asking for is a pardon and a free pass. And of course he would. CPAC takes place in one of two cities every year, no matter what it says on the bill, Sodom and Gomorrah. You guys have heard the stories at TYT over the years about how they fly in sex workers and of all kinds to whenever CPAC is happening, because that's what folks are in town for. It's a huge party. So during the day, they go into the arena and they give speeches like, it's all about the family unit and family values and good Christian wholesome behaviors and ethics and all of that. And then they check out. They go try to grope a staffer, and then they go get a massage with a happy ending. Like, that's how it works, and that's how they like it. That's how they want it. And that, and Matt Schlapp is just as Fox News is like, we can't keep paying these fines. I think there's a road of how we're messaging every day that will be the most lucrative for us. That's what Schlappy's doing. Schlappy's like, well, I can't go on Fox News anymore, so my recourse is to brand Newsmax as the new Fox News, which I'm on, and then try to ask and shame Fox News into letting me on there so I can have a higher profile again, so I can make the third prong, which is there is so much money in running events like this, CPAC. There is so much cash in it, with whether it's CPAC or an awards show or anything else like that. They make so much cash by being in charge of it for all kinds of reasons, both above and below the table. And below the table, under the table, especially groping and money handing is really Matt Schlapp's specialty.
Apparently also his specialty is defending other people who have been accused of sexual misconduct, like Russell Brand. And Donald Trump, of course he did. He can't keep his mouth shut, despite the fact that this obviously also implicates Matt Schlapp. I want to read this one really quick. Red Witch Dragon says, you Schlapp me, Matt, I'll Schlapp you back. Definitely slapped down by Fox News.
Just really quick, to redeem that DF card, email rewards@tyt.com and provide your first name, last name, and the handle you used for the comment.
Awesome. Okay, do that. Chai Chai Massey is the name. Maybe I'm saying it wrong, but either way, you get a Blue Apron gift card. So follow Brett's instructions. With that said, let's go into this next story, which is bad news that could ultimately lead to maybe some good news. But let's start with the bad news. 500,000 people, including a significant number of children, were wrongfully kicked off of Medicaid because of state system errors, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services said on Thursday. So Political reported that 29 states in Washington, D.C. were erroneously reviewing eligibility for Medicaid at the family level instead of on an individual basis, the agency said. That means thousands of people, including children, were deemed ineligible for the low-income insurance program when they should have been automatically re-enroll. Now, CMS alerted states to the problem late last month and ordered them to immediately reinstate coverage for anyone who lost their insurance and paused disenrollments for anyone else who might be affected while they fix the underlying issue or risk losing federal funding. Of course, that doesn't negate the fact that some of these individuals might not have been able to go to their doctor during that time period. You can't undo the damage that has been done in that regard, but at least they're trying to rectify it in some ways now. Politico says, as a result of the glitch, families have been flagged as ineligible for Medicaid coverage, even if a kid or other household member should still be individually eligible. Adults in most states that have expanded Medicaid qualify for the program if they make up to 138% of the federal poverty level, while kids can still be eligible at up to 200 or 300%, depending on where they live. The system errors identified by CMS led to children in at least 18 states and Washington, D.C. losing coverage, while adult household members with different eligibility statuses lost coverage in another 22 states. Some had both issues, and 23 states and territories had neither. So now, of the states that have been able to estimate the number of affected individuals, Nevada and Pennsylvania reported the biggest coverage losses, with upwards of 100,000 people affected in each state. Nevada health officials on Friday announced they reinstated coverage for about 114,000 people who lost coverage because of the program, while Pennsylvania, which is still determining a final number of people affected, is working on next steps for reinstatement and has implemented a manual change to process cases at the individual level. And Brett, the only thing I can think of through this story is that something like this would never happen if we had universal healthcare. You wouldn't have to go through all of these administrative hurdles. You wouldn't have these issues because everyone would be enrolled. You wouldn't have to, first of all, pay all those administrative costs, but you wouldn't have these types of system errors. You wouldn't have to constantly check eligibility. Everyone would get it. That would solve these problems, like just point blank eliminated the chances of this happening again.
Yeah, this is the goal of this seemed to be to kill children. So this is a, you know, the people who are most against Medicaid expansion are Republicans. And in this respect, Republicans are for abortions after birth. It sounds like, you know, just don't provide the medical care to kids and let them die. So many little pockets of horrible here. One, that they would do it on the family level. They just made that up. They just made up that that's how you do it. And then they started kicking people off based on that. The administrative cost skyrocket of then having to, you know, having to get them back on the pay, on the rolls. And in the meantime, people don't have healthcare coverage. So either they discover during an emergency that it's gonna bankrupt them, or they avoid coverage, they avoid going to the doctor, which makes things worse. And I hate to break it to you, more expensive in America, when people either have to use the emergency room or they basically have to use the emergency room when the thing that would have been solved with preventative care due to having coverage escalates into something that is now requiring emergent care.
And speaking of like the possibility of expanding Medicaid and Republicans maybe having to potentially make the argument as to why children shouldn't get healthcare, I'd like to see them try to defend that point. But in the Senate, a new bill was introduced that is seeking to extend Medicaid coverage to all children by automatically enrolling them in the federal health insurance program, which is something we should already be doing and are not, but something we should be doing. Some more on that from Newsweek. Announcing the draft measure on Friday, Bob Casey, the senior Democratic senator for Pennsylvania, said in a statement, "As Americans, it is our solemn obligation to ensure every child has the support they need to reach their full potential. Too many of our kids are struggling to stay healthy because their families can't afford the care that they need." Under the proposed bill, children would be automatically signed up at birth and would remain eligible for health insurance until they turn 18. Though parents would have the ability to opt out if they already have coverage for their family through other means. At present, minors are only eligible for Medicaid and their family's income is 138% of the federal poverty level in many places, which in the 48 contiguous states is $34,307 for a family of three. Families earning more can receive lower cost coverage for their children, but there are many who still struggle to afford that coverage. And I was thinking about pointing out how many kids are not covered by health insurance, but I think that doesn't paint a whole picture of the reality of what this is, because even kids who are covered by private insurance, the families might not be able to afford the co-pays, or they might not be able, you know, to still afford to take their kids to the doctor. Even if they are covered, there are still so many costs associated with it, so many hurdles they have to overcome to be able to provide their child adequate healthcare. So even plenty of people who are currently covered by private insurance might opt to have their kids covered by Medicare or Medicaid, excuse me, instead, because it might cover more than their private insurance.
Yeah, and there's so many states that are just like, no. The states that have the lowest threshold, typically the poorest states, are the ones who are like somehow run by Republicans and are like, no, we don't want it. We don't want free, we don't want money given to us to keep our own residents alive and healthy. They don't want it. But the thing is if you break this all apart and you ask the questions individually to people, and that's something that we've been doing in when Michael Schur and David Schuster go to Trump rallies, and they even ask Trump supporters, yo, should there be Medicaid? There's people who are going to Trump rallies to say, please turn Medicaid back on for me. And so this is one of those things, if you ask someone, obviously people are gonna say, yeah, we should give children, poor children healthcare. It's ridiculous, but this weird like backwards logic from some Republicans that they contort themselves into because they just love being a fundamentalist is like, yeah, no, we need more, fewer incentives for people to have kids if they can't afford it. And this is one, the certain death of their child.
And that is the pro-life position, apparently. Love that. All right, that's all the time we have until we come back for the aftermath. So stick around, or if you're watching on linear, switch over to Twitch, YouTube, or our website to see some of that. We'll be back.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.